Listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded December 7th and 10th, 2025. Well, more than a week past the presidential election in Honduras, and the winner is still uncertain. One sure thing, though, is the further damage this poll has done to the country's already fragile democratic bona fides. Starting with Donald Trump's overt meddling and pardon granting to former Honduran president and convicted drugs trafficker Juan Orlando Hernandez, through the technological election night clown show, leading to the current national squabble over widespread vote counting irregularities, determining electoral legitimacy at the end of all this will be the first Herculean task of whomever takes over. Karen Spring is the Honduran-based coordinator for the Honduras Solidarity Network, who described themselves as a, quote, decentralized network of approximately 30 organizations from across Canada and the United States committed to demonstrating and advocating for solidarity with the Honduran social movement. Spring is also the author of numerous articles and reports regarding human rights issues, of which she's testified before Canadian parliamentary committees. Her writing can be found at her website, akiabajo.com. Karen Spring in the first half. And the presidents of Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of the Congo were in Washington last week. Paul Kagame and Felix Tshisekedi joined the American president to sign a public pledge to end violence. It's been received in some quarters as a promise the generational conflict between neighbors that's cost millions of mostly Congolese lives will end. But how far serial peace accord reneger Kagame can be trusted to work for a lasting peace this time around remains a question. Judy Reaver is a Montreal journalist and author. Her book, In Praise of Blood, The Crimes of the Rwandan Patriotic Front, examines the Rwandan genocide of the last century and subsequent flourishing of its primary progenitor, Paul Kagame. We talked in February about her Canadian Dimension article, Paul Kagame's Foray in Eastern Congo Leaves Thousands Dead and Sparks Fears of a Broader War. Her latest there is no end in sight to Rwanda's war in Congo despite peace deal. Judy Reaver and Donald Trump's artful peace deal in Central Africa in the second half. But first, Karen Spring, and from fiasco to farce for Honduran's presidential election. Welcome back to the program, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course, and it's been quite a while. And what a difference the 4 years make since we last spoke. Xiomara Castro then was readying to be the first woman president of Honduras. And more importantly, she was going to be the first leftist president. Now, it seems, Karen, the wheel has turned back to its beginnings as though she hadn't been there at all. Karen, what's the sense of this election from those leftists in Honduras left behind?
Sure. So I think it's important that people know that there's an election process, if not a crisis, actually unfolding in Honduras at the moment. Hondurans went to the polls a week ago, so on November the 30th. And ever since this entire week that's passed, there's been no winner that has been declared on any of the different levels that people were voting. So the president, the Congress representatives, and then the local authorities. And there's been a whole pattern and a whole effort to basically sort out what is going on with the technological systems in the country that were responsible. It was basically the tech that was responsible for interpreting the results from the vote tally sheets and then disseminating the results. And the system keeps going down. Today it was announced that it was hacked. And so there's a lot of concern about the integrity of the election results. And there's a lot of infighting amongst the parties because of the very significant polarization in the country that's basically being egged on and incited by MAGA, U.S.-based representatives, elected representatives from the Republican Party, Trump loyalists that really been getting involved in the inner workings of the election. And so things not very there at the moment. Everyone is at the edge of their seats watching what is unfolding, as it seems like the national community, and I probably shouldn't say that because I should be saying specifically the Trump administration, is really trying to impose a president on the country through tweets, basically saying that their candidate, which is a national party, a very conservative party, should be declared the winner of the elections, even though the local Honduran autonomous electoral authority continues to insist, please wait, we need to be patient, we need time to sort out these technological issues. There have been no results of these elections so far.
Well, so firstly, I'm really curious. I mean, there has been a lot of technical problems similar to in 2017 when the election was said to have been rigged again for a second time by Juan Orlando Hernandez. Hernandez plays big in the run-up to this election as well, and he is the former president and what is described in Honduras by some, at least, as the narco dictator of the country. He is serving time, or was until the day after the election, serving time for drugs trafficking on an immense scale, tons and tons of cocaine being imported into the United States. Donald Trump pardoned him, almost, it seems like, some sort of quid pro quo that if Hernandez's loyalists in Honduras would jimmy the election machinery as they did in 2017, which certainly seems to have happened, then he would get the pardon the day after the election. I'm, of course, just speculating wildly here, but that seems to be exactly what happened. How is Hernandez's pardon figuring in the media and at the street level in Honduras?
So I think what's really important right now is that Juan Orlando Hernandez is the former president of Honduras. He was in power following, or he came into power following, the 2009 coup, where the democratically elected president was overthrown. And he came to power and he stayed in power for 8 years. And he's actually the same, he's from the same party as the National Party, as the party that the current Trump administration is backing in this current election. And so Trump put out a tweet about 72 hours before the election, and he said that he gave the impression that it was a conditional, pardon, that if the National Party candidate won in the elections on November 30th in Honduras, then he would pardon the ex-president of Honduras. When in fact, that pardon was actually definitive. And on December the 1st, the day after the elections, as the election results were slowly starting to roll in, Juan Orlando Hernandez was pardoned by Donald Trump, and he left a prison in the U.S. Where he had been sentenced for 45 years in prison for being involved in what U.S. prosecutors said to be one of the most dangerous drug conspiracies in the world. And Juan Orlando Hernandez was the president, like I mentioned, for 8 years in Honduras. He was very close to the United States, and he worked very closely with the United States. And while he was doing that, he was helping the most dangerous drug cartels in the world traffic over 400 tons of cocaine into the United States. And he was doing that from the presidential palace. He was using his power, his ability to control the police and the military, to allow huge shipments of drugs to pass through Honduras, but also to allow the Honduran ports and the Honduran airports to be used to traffic drugs to other parts of the world, including Europe. And so this is a man that is extremely dangerous. He's a very expert manipulator, and he is now free in the United States and hoping to return to Honduras. And obviously this would have really grave consequences for both the US and also for Honduras, because he could easily go back to the country and reintegrate into the same criminal structures that he was previously working with. And so it's quite a concern, especially given that Donald Trump and the Trump administration are blowing up boats in the Caribbean and the Pacific in the name of the war on drugs, trying to so-called fight narco-terrorism and drug traffickers in those two bodies of water off of the coast of Venezuela and Colombia, while he is freeing an extremely dangerous former president that since 2004 contributed to sending tons of cocaine to the United States. And so I think this pardon really exposes the Trump administration's hypocrisy, but also the falseness of their claim that what they're doing in the Pacific is acting, and it's more a reestablishing the U.S. control of the region and asserting U.S. power in South America, and then what they're doing with the elections in Honduras in as well.
Has it hurt him or helped him as Fura and his chances, or would he have just run away with it if it hadn't been for this meddling?
Well, honestly, Chris, I think that one of the most concerning things about the Trump administration's intervention in this election is that Nasri Asfura was actually in third place and was largely seen as not even really having a chance to win the presidency prior to the elections. And so for most of Honduras, and myself included, we were shocked when we found out that he was doing very well in the votes. And it actually makes me very suspicious about the integrity of a logical system that was responsible for basically the key like instrument to carry out the whole election when this Nasri Asfura started leading in the polls. And I mean, there's a very, very close tie between this Trump administration's candidate and the other candidate from the Liberal Party named Salvador Nasrallah. And so we think that the Trump administration's intervention is not only unprecedented in Honduras and possibly in the region potentially. I mean, and I'm talking about public, blatant backing, partisan backing of a candidate in a foreign election, but also it's had a definite role in the integrity of the elections, and it's becoming increasingly clear that Trump is trying to impose a president on this small Central American country and also bring a party to power that has been so deeply involved in drug trafficking and corruption in the past that it really makes you wonder why on earth they're doing that and what negative consequences it's going to have for the United States, especially considering that the U.S. is trying to crack down on immigration. I mean, if you're trying to stop immigration, then I think stop meddling in the affairs of a foreign country, creating conditions that cause people to flee. I think that that's one of the places the U.S. should start, is not supporting a party that is so deeply involved in corruption and drug trafficking in the past and insist that they come back to power.
Do you know who a person named Medenci Terquios is?
Yes. So he was actually, he's a drug trafficker that was recently sentenced in the New York Southern District Court, I believe. It was a former member of the Liberal Party. I believe he was a former congressional representative. And I'm actually glad you mentioned that, because I think it's important for folks, your audience, to understand that Honduras, since the 2009 coup, was basically taken over by drug cartels. And the two dominant parties in power that have sort of for decades have controlled the Honduran presidency, the Congress, they're very deeply entrenched in drug trafficking. And so you have Juan Orlando Hernandez, a former president of the National Party, several of his party members, Congress representatives, military that were loyal to him, have been accused of drug trafficking and very significant corruption. And Midense, who you just mentioned, he's part of the Liberal Party, which is the other traditional party that has also been very, very implicated in drug trafficking. And so these two parties have been, for the last, decades in Honduras, have been basically sharing power, you know, throwing power back and forth to one another, depending on who's in the president's seat or who's the president and who dominates the Congress. And so these parties are very much implicated in drug trafficking and corruption. And so that's why it was very refreshing for Hondurans in 2021 when President Xiomara Castro, who was the first woman president to be elected as president in Honduras, took power on a very progressive platform. She was seen as a way of challenging the power of these two traditional parties that have long been U.S. allies, that have long represented the interests very wealthy families in Honduras that have dominated Honduras, that have contributed to the great inequality in the country. And so her platform is refreshing. It was exciting. People had a lot of hopes and high expectations. And during the 4 years that she was in power, her policies were, you know, were reformist at best. And they were heavily criticized by the United States, by the State Department, and also by specific Republican representatives as well. And so now, I mean, the election, the imposition of the Trump administration's candidate and backing of the National Party is no surprise to people in Honduras. The Trump administration and the State Department do not like the progressive policies of President Xiomara Castro. They do not like how it threatens U.S. interests. And so they're very interested, as they have been for the 4 years that President Xiomara has been in power, to get her out of power and to install a pro-U.S., pro-foreign investment government. And so, and it doesn't matter if these presidents or their parties are deeply entrenched in drug trafficking or organized crime. What the U.S. seems to be interested in is securing their economic interests and securing their geopolitical power in the region.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about Castro in a second. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Karen Spring. Karen is the Honduras-based coordinator of the Honduras Solidarity Network. She's lived and worked in Honduras on human rights issues, supporting community-based organizations for over 16 years, and she recently helped coordinate a 47-person international election observation mission, along with the U.S.-based organization Global Exchange and Honduran organization The Center for Democracy Studies. I'm interested to hear what their report is. Karen, the reason I mentioned Medense Turquios is that in an article by Jose Luis Granados Sija at Dropsite News, the article is from yesterday, published yesterday, Honduras plunges into post-election turmoil as electoral official alleges monumental fraud, in scare quotes. He, in that article, mentions that Hernandez wasn't the first high official pardoned by Donald Trump on drugs charges. In fact, Medense Turquios, the man you described from the opposing party, also received a Trump pardon a couple months before. I don't know if this is a hedging move on Trump's part. I mean, he is a casino man after all. But to have guys in both leading parties on the hook in this sense seems a sensible thing for him to do. As far as the ping pong game that you mentioned between these two parties, the Civic Council of Popular and Indigenous Organizations of Honduras, COPIN, they describe these two parties as merely being entrenched political and criminal elites now in the position to take power again in Honduras. They can't see any upside for them, regardless of one side or the other winning. I wonder, Karen, why did Castro's party do so badly? They're polling somewhere less than 20%, if the numbers can be believed. Was she such a disaster in her presidency, or what happened?
Yeah, I think this is sort of a question a lot of progressives around the world and in Honduras are asking as well. I personally didn't trust the polls going into this election. I felt like it was a very polarized pre-electoral context. And so I didn't trust the polls. And the understanding was that it was going to be a close race between the Libre Party, the current party in power, the Progressive Party, and the Liberal Party. And so I think that it's still being sorted out whether Libre did really lose as badly as the election results are reporting at this moment, particularly given the very significant concerns with the technological issues that are being denounced and that are causing an ongoing and a deepening crisis in the country. I think that Castro came to power at a moment when the drug trafficking president, Juan Orlando Hernandez, was very unpopular, and where he was being abandoned by his own allies that stuck with him for many years, including the U.S. government. And so people really wanted him out of power, and they elected President Xiomara on her platform, but also on the hope that things would change in the country. And I think in 4 years, President Castro did do very admirable things. I think she did promote policies that are beneficial to the majority of the population that have long been forgotten, long been neglected by the political system. She, for example, rolled back privatization of the energy industry, which she tried to make energy cheaper and more affordable for poor Hondurans. She also overturned labor laws that basically created created a lot of insecurity for the working class, because the law didn't allow for long-term contracts and pensions and job security. And she also got rid of the infamous zones of economic development and employment, which I think is really important to mention to a U.S. audience. They're called ZEDES, the zones of economic development and employment. They're basically a project promoted under the Juan Orlando Hernandez administration that allowed very wealthy libertarians from the U.S. to carve off chunks of Honduran territory and create a libertarian private government, basically. And the Xiomara Castro administration eliminated the constitutional existence of these zones. And these very wealthy billionaires, like Peter Thiel and others, Roger Stone himself as well, are very invested in these this ZEDE. And there's one specifically called Grupo or Prospera Group. Grupo Prospera in Spanish. And so this is another reason why, you know, this is a good thing. I think the majority of the country did not want the zones. They felt like it was an assault on the sovereignty of Hondurans and on the right of Honduras to control its territory. And so these were overturned under her, but under Castro. But I think that as all governments experience when they get to power, especially progressive governments, they're up against very strong forces to maintain a status quo. In Honduras, these forces are the wealthy elite and also the U.S. government. And none of those two groups were very excited about the policies that Xiomara was putting in place. And she made some mistakes as well about supporting land issues related to small farmers and also indigenous organizations, and sort of they were really hopeful that there would be significant changes related to those, especially since Honduras is one of the most dangerous countries in the world to be a land defender and an environmentalist. And so I think that she was just up against extremely high expectations and possibly needed more time, but also it was the learning process, I think, as well. And I think that the results of this election will be an opportunity for the Libre Party and the progressives of Honduras and the region to really think about strategy, to really think about what went wrong and why did President Castro's popularity seem to have declined so significantly.
Well, and as far as the land reforms goes, Castro may well have walked into the same quagmire that her husband, the former president, Mel Zelaya, did, making quite modest land reforms policy proposals in his final year in the presidency. And he was dragged out of his bed in his underwear and spirited out of the country in a coup in 2009, a coup that Canada's then Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, was the first in the world, his place of pride, being the first country to ratify the coup government or to try to legitimize it. In that article that I mentioned earlier by Jose Luis Granado Cias, Honduras plunges into post-election turmoil as electoral officials alleges monumental fraud at drop site. That official that he cites is Marlon Ochoa. He sits on the National Election Council. They have representatives from one of each of the leading parties. He representing Xiomara Castro's Libre Party. He wrote a letter outlining some of the problems with this election. With he cites deliberate failures of the technology, disabled biometrics, altered digital tally sheets, unexplained vote, quote, transfers. This is where votes that were voted for one person ended up Miami style going to the opponent. A 40-hour detention of more than 16,000 tally sheets that represent almost a million votes being held back from the count at likely some crucial moment of this whole thing. It all smells to high heaven. And he says that this election cannot be counted on as being legitimate. That is something echoed by Salvador Nasralla of the Liberal Party. He too says that there's been irregularities in so many of them that the whole election is in question. When you said that you were a part, Karen, of the organization's Global Exchange in Honduras and the Honduran organization, the Center for Democracy Studies, while they were monitoring this election, what have they said about it?
Sure. So actually, Jose Luis Granados Ceja, the author of that Drop Site News article, he was actually on our mission. Ah. He got access to a lot of the information that he's reporting because of CESPAD and Global Exchange. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that CESPAD was raising concerns about the TREP system, which is the transmission of the preliminary transmission of electoral results, which is the system that is the whole techno that's creating all the technological issues. And there's a whole series of steps within that technological process. And so they raised concern about that system before the elections. For example, the company that is responsible, ASD, it has experienced complaints against it in Colombia for being involved in destruction of evidence and also fraudulent election behaviors as well. When it was contracted, it was not contracted in the period of time that's required by law in order to test the software to ensure that it works. And it wasn't, it did not. And when they did test it, which was a couple days before the election, it failed miserably in doing the very basic duties that it was contracted to do, despite claiming that it had the experience and despite the contract that they signed with the government.
And there was also so-called modifications to that software that were done without the express approval of the body that Marlon Ochoa sits on, the National Election Council, too, according to him.
Yep, that's correct. And actually, Marlon Ochoa, who's the counselor for the Libre Party inside the National Electoral Council, that's the authority that oversees the elections. He did a press conference earlier today saying that it's not just that the votes were being changed inside the system, but the public cannot go in and see the electoral results, the updated electoral results. He also said that the system had been reset, erasing data in the system, and that it had also been hacked. There was evidence of that had someone had gone into the system, had changed things, and then had left and left no trace of what they did or who it was. And these were concerns that CESPAD, the Honduran organization we worked with, actually had raised prior to the election. And so all of the recipe for a disastrous electoral result was already laid before the elections occurred. And that was not only Marlon Ochoa saying that, but there was also CESPAD, which is an independent organization, sort of think tank organization based in the capital city. And so this is really concerning. I mean, this is like, I've never seen any of the elections that I've been involved in, which have been five, I think now, I've never seen a crisis that is so technologically focused. And what's unfortunate about it is that it's such a specific type of software that it's very hard for people that might not be technologically savvy to follow what is going on. And that's a big problem with, you know, trying to stop the U.S. intervention, but also kind of raise concern with the international observers that are in the country, like the Organization of American States and the European Union, to also raise concern and speak publicly about these technological issues and how they're ultimately undermining the results of the election. Just yesterday, the Libre Party submitted a judicial challenge asking for the election results on the presidential level, given the lack of integrity of the technological software. They asked it to be nulled and for the election to be repeated. And so we're waiting to see what will result of that motion and what will happen in the coming days. But it's definitely expected to be a bigger crisis.
Another troubling aspect of this is the threats made from the United States on remittances, Hondurans working in the States sending their money back. Also, what's going on, the general immigration situation there, the fear and violence being perpetrated against people, and this being used as well to lever decisions made in far-flung places. Karen, sadly, we're fast out of time. Promise that we can get together before 4 years goes by again and follow up, perhaps in the new year, do a postmortem of some sort on democracy, or maybe a comes through in the final reel, let's hope. But thanks a lot, Karen, for coming on. I want everyone to stay tuned because when I come back, I'm going to be joined by Judy Reaver. We're going to go to Africa and more intrigues and doings of the Americans and others over there. Thanks again, Karen.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people whose bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you.